Chapter 5. What we can for you? He picked up the lantern. The intense black spokes of shadow swung about in the circle of light. A terrible fury, the blind rage of self-preservation, possessed Razumov. Ah! The vile beast, he bellowed out in an unearthly tone which made the lantern jump and tremble. She'll wake you. Give me. Give me. He looked round wildly, seized the handle of a stable fork, and rushing forward struck at the prostrate body with inarticulate cries. After a time his cry ceased, and the rain of blows fell in the stillness and shadows of the cellar-like stable. Razumov belabored Zamyanich with an insatiable fury, in great volleys of sounding thwax. Except for the violent movements of Razumov, nothing stirred, neither the beaten man nor the spoke-like shadows on the walls. And only the sound of blows was heard. It was a weird scene. Suddenly there was a sharp crack. The stick broke, and half of it flew far away into the gloom beyond the light. At the same time Zamyanich sat up. At this Razumov became as motionless as the man with the lantern, only his breast heaved for air, as if ready to burst. Some dull sensation of pain must have penetrated at last the consoling night of drunkenness enwrapping the bright Russian soul of Alden's enthusiastic praise. But Zamyanich evidently saw nothing. His eyeballs blinked all white in the light once, twice, then the gleam went out. For a moment he sat in the straw with closed eyes with a strange air of weary meditation, then fell over slowly on his side without making the slightest sound. Only the straw rustled a little. Razumov stared wildly, fighting for his breath. After a second or two he heard a light snore. He flung from him the piece of stick remaining in his grasp, and went off with great hasty strides without looking back once. After going heedlessly for some 50 yards along the street, he walked into a snowdrift, and was up to his knees before he stopped. This recalled him to himself, and glancing about he discovered he had been going in the wrong direction. He retraced his steps, but now at a more moderate pace. When passing before the house he had just left, he flourished his fist at the somber refuge of misery and crime rearing its sinister bulk on the white ground. It had an air of brooding. He let his arm fall by his side discouraged. Zamyanich's passionate surrender to sorrow and consolation had baffled him. That was the people. A true Russian man. Razumov was glad he had beaten that brute, the bright soul of the other. Here they were. The people and the enthusiast. Between the two he was done for. Between the drunkenness of the peasant incapable of action, and the dream intoxication of the idealist incapable of perceiving the reason of things, and the true character of men. It was a sort of terrible childishness. But children at their masters. H. The stick, the stern hand, thought Razumov, longing for power to hurt and destroy. He was glad he had thrashed that brute. The physical exertion had left his body in a comfortable glow. His mental agitation too was clarified, as if all the feverishness had gone out of him in a fit of outward violence. Together with the persisting sense of terrible danger, he was conscious now of a tranquil, unquenchable hate. He walked slower and slower. And indeed, considering the guest he had in his rooms, it was no wonder he lingered on the way. It was like harboring a pestilential disease that would not perhaps take your life, but would take from you all that made life worth living, a subtle pest that would convert earth into a hell. What was he doing now? Lying on the bed as if dead, with the back of his hands over his eyes? Razumov had a morbidly vivid vision of Alden on his bed, the white pillow hollowed by the head, the legs in long boots, the upturned feet. And in his abhorrence he said to himself, I'll kill him when I get home. But he knew very well that that was of no use. The corpse hanging round his neck would be nearly as fatal as the living man. Nothing short of complete annihilation would do. And that was impossible. What then? Must one kill oneself to escape this visitation? Razumov's despair was too profoundly tinged with hate to accept that issue. And yet it was despair nothing less at the thought of having to live with Alden for an indefinite number of days in mortal alarm at every sound. But perhaps when he heard that this right soul of Zamayanich suffered from a drunken eclipse, the fellow would take his infernal resignation somewhere else. And that was not likely on the face of it. Razumov thought, colon, I am being crushed, and I can't even run away. Other men at somewhere a corner of the earth, some little house in the provinces, where they had a right to take their troubles. A material refuge. He had nothing. He had not even a moral refuge, the refuge of confidence. To whom could he go with this tale in all this great, great land? Razumov stamped his foot, and under the soft carpet of snow felt the hard ground of Russia, inanimate, cold, inert, like a sullen and tragic mother hiding her face under a winding sheet, his native soil, his very own, without a fireside, without a heart. He cast his eyes upwards and stood amazed. The snow had ceased to fall, and now, as if by a miracle, he saw above his head the clear black sky of the northern winter, decorated with the sumptuous fires of the stars. It was a canopy fit for the resplendent purity of the snows. Razumov received an almost physical impression of endless space, and of countless millions. He responded to it with the readiness of a Russian who is born to an inheritance of space and numbers. Under the sumptuous immensity of the sky, the snow covered the endless forests, the frozen rivers, the plains of an immense country, obliterating the landmarks, the accidents of the ground, leveling everything under its uniform whiteness, like a monstrous blank page awaiting the record of an inconceivable history. It covered the passive land with its lives of countless people like Zamayanich, and its handful of agitators like this Alden murdering foolishly. It was a sort of sacred inertia. Razumov felt a respect for it. A voice seemed to cry within him, don't touch it. It was a guarantee of duration, of safety, while the travail of maturing destiny went on a work, not of revolutions with their passionate levity of action, and their shifting impulses, but of peace. What it needed was not the conflicting aspirations of a people, but a will strong and one. It wanted not the babble of many voices, but a man strong and one. Razumov stood on the point of conversion. He was fascinated by its approach, by its overpowering logic. For a train of thought is never false. The falsehood lies deep in the necessities of existence, in secret fears and half-formed ambitions, in the secret confidence combined with a secret mistrust of ourselves, in the love of hope and the dread of uncertain days. In Russia, the land of spectral ideas and disembodied aspirations, many brave minds have turned away at last from the vain and endless conflict to the one great historical fact of the land. They turned to autocracy for the peace of their patriotic conscience as a weary unbeliever, touched by grace, turns to the faith of his fathers for the blessing of spiritual rest. Like other Russians before him, Razumov, in conflict with himself, felt the touch of grace upon his forehead. Alden means disruption, he thought to himself, beginning to walk again. What is he with his indignation, with his talk of bondage, with his talk of God's justice? All that means disruption. Better that thousands should suffer than that a people should become a disintegrated mass, helpless like dust in the wind. Obscurantism is better than the light of incendiary torches. The seed germinates in the night. Out of the dark soil springs the perfect plant. But a volcanic eruption is sterile, the ruin of the fertile ground. And am I, who love my country, who have nothing but that to love, and put my faith in am I to have my future, perhaps my usefulness, ruined by this sanguinary fanatic? The grace entered into Razumov. He believed now in the man who would come at the appointed time. What is a throne? A few pieces of wood upholstered in velvet. But a throne is a seat of power too. The form of government is the shape of a tool and instrument. But 20,000 bladders inflated by the noblest sentiments and jostling against each other in the air are a miserable encumbrance of space, holding no power, possessing no will, having nothing to give. He went on thus, heedless of the way, holding a discourse with himself with extraordinary abundance and facility. Generally his phrases came to him slowly, after a conscious and painstaking wooing. Some superior power had inspired him with a flow of masterly argument as certain converted sinners become overwhelmingly loquacious. He felt an austere exaltation. What are the luridly smoky lucubrations of that fellow to the clear grasp of my intellect, he thought. Is not this my country? Have I not got 40 million brothers? He asked himself, unanswerably victorious in the silence of his breast. And the fearful thrashing he had given the inanimate Zamyanich seemed to him a sign of intimate union, a pathetically severe necessity of brotherly love. Oh! If I must suffer, let me at least suffer for my convictions, not for a crime my reason, my cool superior reason, rejects. He ceased to think for a moment. The silence in his breast was complete. But he felt a suspicious uneasiness, such as we may experience, when we enter an unlighted strange place, the irrational feeling that something may jump upon us in the dark, the absurd dread of the unseen. Of course he was far from being a moss-grown reactionary. Everything was not for the best. Despotic bureaucracy. Abuses. Corruption. And so on. Capable men were wanted. Enlightened intelligences. Devoted hearts. But absolute power should be preserved, the tool ready for the man, for the great autocrat of the future. Razumov believed in him. The logic of history made him unavoidable. The state of the people demanded him. What else, he asked himself ardently, could move all that mass in one direction? Nothing could. Nothing but a single will. He was persuaded that he was sacrificing his personal longings of liberalism, rejecting the attractive error for the stern Russian truth. That's patriotism, he observed mentally, and added, there's no stopping midway on that road, and then remarked to himself, I am not a coward. And again there was a dead silence in Razumov's breast. He walked with lowered head, making room for no one. He walked slowly, and his thoughts returning spoke within him with solemn slowness. What is this, Alden? And what am I? Only 2 grains of sand. But a great mountain is made up of just such insignificant grains. And the death of a man, or of many men, is an insignificant thing. Yet we combat a contagious pestilence. Do I want his death? No. I would save him, if I could. But no one can do that. He is the withered member which must be cut off. If I must perish through him, let me at least not perish with him, and associated against my will with his somber folly, that understands nothing either of men or things. Why should I leave a false memory? It passed through his mind that there was no one. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.